Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This podcast is brought to you by The Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to The Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, midweek Wednesday afternoon, May 7th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. The price of used cars at its highest level in 2 years. We'll cover the reasons why in our next segment. But right now, the Federal Reserve is set to release its latest decision on interest rates next hour. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Paul Christopher, head of global investment strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And it seems like the Fed is going to stand pat when it comes to interest rates, because if they were going to hike or lower, that move would have been telegraphed some time ago.
Yes, probably. Yes, that's true. But I think your previous report is correct that investors will be looking very carefully and parsing the guidance, the language that comes out of the Fed meeting today, for what might be coming in the future. There has been some talk among Fed officials publicly that we might be seeing a rate cut by June. I kind of doubt that, but that's still a possibility.
Now, you have a lot of strategists and just everybody who's charged with making guesses about the economy since early April, when the tariff announcements were made. Basically, every single person has said, I don't know what to make of economic policy going forward. There are just so many question marks and so many unresolved issues up in the air. If you are Chairman Jerome Powell, can you go up at the news conference and shrug your shoulders and say your guess is as good as mine?
Well, there's ways to say that and ways not to say it. That's probably not the way to say it, but he could certainly say that, look, we're expecting inflation. A tariff is a tax, and when you put a tax on a good, its price goes up. So we are expecting to see prices go up. He could say that, but we don't think that's going to be sort of a self-propagating mechanism, right? Prices go up once, and then that's it. After that, the price level is higher, but inflation, the rate of increases, comes down. So he could say something like, we're waiting for the impact of tariffs, and we know that the economy will slow. We want to see how much inflation will slow alongside it. That would be a fair statement, and something like that could suggest rate cuts by later this year, as we do think inflation comes later in the summer and then a slowdown into the year end.
Now, a number of companies in their first quarter earnings statements pulled their guidance for 2025. Now, what does that mean for the future of the dot plot? Can the Fed refer to that going forward, or does that uncertainty mean that it's off the table for now?
Well, they'll still do the dot plot, I'm pretty sure, but we'll just have to remember that when we're looking at it, there's probably more variability around those forecasts than there typically is.
And then looking ahead to the possibility of a rate cut in June, that's a 1 in 3 chance, and a 33% chance is not zero, but it's not 100 either.
Yeah, that's right. If you hit a 333 batting average as a Chicago Cub, you'd probably be pretty happy about that. But for financial markets, that's not quite enough.
And then What going forward, though, when we're looking at trying to figure out what policy is going to look like, when can we start to get a little more certainty? Is it going to be the announcement of trade deals, or is it conversely, will it be watching inflation take off slightly because of a lack of supply?
Well, the first thing that has to come is that the policy gets set, and then we begin to see what the price changes are. So July is going to be very important. That early part of July, when the 90-day pause that the president put on in early April, that's going to expire in early July. And then at that point, we'll see, well, which countries have negotiated lower rates, which have not. Importantly, we need to see China's rates come down, and we would like to see Europe's rates come down as well. If we can see a lot of movement back down towards that 10% universal tariff, that would make us feel a lot better about the economy going forward.
Paul Christopher, head of global investment strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis, thank you for joining us today. Coming up, if you're looking to buy a used car, be prepared to pay more.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
An index that tracks the price of vehicles sold at wholesale auctions is at a two-year high. Let's track that trend with the help of Jeff Gilbert, CBS News automotive correspondent based in Detroit. Jeff, thank you for joining us today. And in the words of the legendary local TV commercial for the now long gone Victory Auto Wreckers in Bensonville, it turns out that old car is indeed worth money.
Well, yes, it is. And, you know, also, you know, things just have consequences. Well, what am I trying to think of? You know, there are impacts of one thing has an impact on another thing. You know, you've got tariffs that could raise the prices of new cars, and that puts pressure on the used car market.
Now, the price of everything is just a lot higher than it used to be, and that can work for you and work against you. For example, if you're a homeowner, your on-paper net worth has gone up by quite a bit if you own a house, and it turns out that car and the old car in the driveway may be worth a little bit more. If you are in the car market, though, and you hear about used car values going up, does that mean you can get more at trade-in if you want to get one of those newer cars that's getting more expensive by the day?
Yes, theoretically. I mean, a couple of years ago during the pandemic, we definitely saw that. Now we're seeing more of a cascading effect with the price of everything likely to go up. What you referred to as the Manheim auction, which is what part of Cox Automotive, and they've started to see the prices go up at auction. That's kind of like a leading indicator of price increases, but this has been expected for a while.
Now, when it comes to getting a break potentially on the used car market, you can get that, just not as good as it used to be.
Well, exactly. I mean, it depends on what you're looking for. There are more of the newer certified pre-owned vehicles out there. They tend to be more expensive because they come with a warranty. Obviously, you've got some other ones out there that are older, that are a little more let the buyer beware, and you'll get more of a discount there. But, you know, one of the other things we're going to see is with newer car prices going up, people who have three-year leases may decide that it's cheaper for them to buy the vehicle that they've been leasing, and that puts fewer used cars on the market.
I think the used car market, I mean, in our head, our vision of a used car may be that first car your friend drove in high school. I mean, I still remember the Dodge Aries K that my friend drove in high school, where you literally had to tie the back doors together so they wouldn't fly apart when the car was in motion. Those days are long gone, thankfully. And used cars are just of higher quality today than they were in the 90s.
Well, certainly a vehicle lasts longer. I'm sure there are some clunkers out there, except the clunkers are older than they were back in the 1990s. But, you know, there are a lot of people who never buy a used car, never buy a new car. The used car market is twice as big as the new car market, just because, you know, over the years, a lot of people have just been pushed out of the new car market.
And then you talk about how people who are finding themselves at the end of a lease, they will just simply buy out the car as opposed to giving it back. And with fewer leases being returned, that potentially puts pressure on the used car market. And then what about the other source of pre-owned vehicles or used cars? And that's fleet sales, like rental car companies.
Well, yeah, you'll see that. That's part of it as well. But the biggest issue is just supply and demand. As more people are pushed out of the new car market, which is likely to happen if prices go up with tariffs, that's just more people in there looking for a used car. And if new car sales go down, that's fewer people trading in their old used car. So what's likely to happen here is just, you know, one of those basic market forces that controls everything, supply and demand.
And then when it comes to the trend of used cars at auction, the value of them ticking up by several percentage points, when could that trend particularly come to an end? Or is this just simply another product of the uncertainty that everybody has regarding the tariff policy?
And when it will come to an end, that's another part of that uncertainty. We just don't know how long this is going to last. If you take a look at the new car market this year, a lot of people are expecting the second half of the year to be fairly depressed because a lot of those sales were pulled ahead into March and April with people saying, hey, I'm going to pull the trigger on a purchase now so that I can get out in front of any price increases.
Jeff Gilbert, CBS News automotive reporter based in Detroit, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, a pioneering weight loss company is reorganizing its finances.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Weight Watchers has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in an effort to stay in business. We're joined by Nathan Bomey, reporter for Axios in Washington. Nathan, thank you for joining us today. And this Chapter 11 filing, Nathan, is the latest turn in Weight Watchers' effort to try to stay relevant in a changing fitness environment.
Yeah, this is a company that's been trying to reinvent itself for a long time. They've been dealing with declining sales and membership here for a few years. And now, you know, the latest development is the surging popularity of weight loss drugs, which, of course, I'm sure many of your listeners know about. And so when you are suddenly presented with an option, a medical treatment option to help you fight obesity, then it becomes less necessary for some folks to feel like they need to join an organization like Weight Watchers. Now, they've tried to embrace the weight loss drugs to an extent, but it wasn't in time to stop them from ending up in bankruptcy.
And it had a great deal of success over the decades. But another thing that seems to be working against Weight Watchers, at least as far as its business model is concerned, is the changing psychology about how we assess our weight and less of a personal response, making less of a personal responsibility issue and more of a genetic issue. And I think that's where those weight loss drugs come into play.
I think it's a very important point. There's been in recognition in the last few years among a lot of folks for the first time that for many people, losing weight is not really a matter of willpower. And I think that's been a real problem for Weight Watchers because over the course of decades, that was the emphasis was on personal responsibility. And I think it's still important to say that doctors still, you know, strongly recommend healthy eating habits when you take a GLP-1 drug. But the truth is that the messaging has changed. Now, Weight Watchers actually maybe sort of saw this coming a few years ago. They started to focus more on wellness, a little bit less on weight loss. That didn't really resonate, so they kind of ditched that. And it just feels like whatever they've tried hasn't quite worked.
And it seems very symbolic that their partnership with Oprah Winfrey ended when the talk show host admitted that she was taking some of those GLP-1 medications and her weight loss was the result of that and not because of Weight Watchers.
Yeah, and she was a big booster of Weight Watchers for a long time. When she invested in the company 6-7 years ago for the first time, the stock went through the roof and she was on the board for a long time, big believer, and I think it did help her for some time. But then she ended up, you know, doing this special on TV last year where she talked about how she's taking these drugs. And, you know, I think that sent a signal to a lot of people who closely follow her that it maybe is okay to do this, and the stigma is starting to fade.
This is a pre-pack bankruptcy to try to eliminate over $1 billion in debt. They hope to emerge from bankruptcy in about 45 days or so. And what does Weight Watchers or WW International look like once the bankruptcy process is complete?
Well, I think right now they're expected to look pretty similar. They're certainly saying there'll be no disruption to their business or their membership, and they're going to continue to emphasize wellness and weight loss, and they're going to, I think, continue to pursue this telehealth model that has led to them being a facilitator of GLP-1 prescriptions. And so that's something you can get with a subscription to this Sequence telehealth service that they bought a couple years ago. So they're going to try to take advantage of weight loss drugs to the extent they can. And it does look like they've got a deal in place to be able to survive bankruptcy.
Nathan Bomey, reporter Axios in Washington, thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Personal Finance Wednesday, making sure your retirement plan isn't one-dimensional.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Noon Business Hour continues. Markets are higher. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director, Clearstead Advisors in New York. Jim, thank you for joining us today. And normally, a half hour before a Fed announcement about interest rates and an hour before a news conference from the chairman of the Fed, usually see a lot of volatility as traders try to hedge a little bit. But this afternoon, it's full steam ahead.
Yeah, I think the markets are correctly assuming that the Fed is going to do nothing, commit to nothing, lay low and get out of the way at this meeting, because they really don't know what's going to transpire over the next 30 and 60 days in terms of tariffs and the implications for the economy, interest rates and supply chain shortages. So they can't make any predictions or estimates or commitments. I think they're hostage to the tariff negotiations. So instead, the markets are correctly focused on tariffs, and there's an important meeting over the weekend with China, and the markets are optimistic that the administration wants to climb down somewhat in an elegant fashion from the precipice of the tariff war, because it's been poorly received by the financial markets, the credit markets, and the voting public. So I think they want to soothe the markets, and I think my guess is there's going to be a positive spin about the meeting over the weekend, and I think the administration is going to be very aggressive in announcing agreements in principle with a variety of nations over the next few months.
Critics of the Fed, especially critics of the Fed's response to the run-up in inflation 4 years ago, have said that the Fed is usually very late to respond to anything. So when you have a quickly changing tariff environment where you have announcements, you have the potential for agreements to be reached, you have the potential for agreements to be pulled off the table, does this essentially paralyze the Fed in its decision-making?
They are in an extraordinarily difficult position because you could have a situation where inflation accelerates. And the question is it a one-time acceleration or does it start to get passed through to consumer expectations? And at the same time, you could have a slowdown and deterioration in the economy. Most people think they will be more attentive to the economy than to inflation. But that's up in the air. That's a guess at this point. So I think that they're in a very difficult situation, and it's going to be compounded by the pressure from Trump on Powell to lower interest rates. But they're strong, they're independent, and I think they'll call it as they see it. And they'll wait till they get more clarity, and then if they have to, they'll move decisively.
We will go in-depth in a couple of segments about the Disney theme park that is planned for the Middle East. But Disney stock popping today, one of the many winners on Wall Street. But it's also a consumer-facing product, a good barometer of where people feel the economy is going. So what is your take on the Disney quarterly report and the stock response to it?
Yeah, it's a positive. It was a surprise positive. Look, the first quarter in the economy, if you X out trade, was pretty good. Real final consumption, real final sales grew at at respectable rates. So we're going into the tariff season, if you will, with an economy that so far is in good shape, even though consumer sentiment is terrible. People are nervous. Forward-looking indicators are very negative. Corporations are negative, but that's all forward-looking. What we're experiencing right now is positive, and the Atlanta Fed, in fact, this week, raised their estimate for second quarter GDP to 2.2%. So if the tariff situation doesn't mess us up, we could be okay, but that's a very big if, because you're going to, if we don't make progress with the Chinese, pretty soon you're going to start to see empty shelves and consumer sentiment and profits deteriorate.
Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director, Clearstead Advisors in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, an explanation of the rule of four futures in retirement. No, the rule of four futures is not an upcoming Marvel movie. We'll explain.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday, and in this segment, we're discussing retirement and making sure you have multiple plans to reflect the circumstances of your life. We welcome in Sherry Greco-Rikas, co-founder of Rappaport Rikas Capital Management in Chicago, author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Sherry, thank you for joining us today. Now, if you do everything right as far as your retirement saving and investing is concerned, you will hit retirement age with a seven-figure account balance. And that's a nice thing to have. But even then, that money has to last the next 30 years, and we don't know what the next 30 years will bring.
Exactly. And I've been doing retirement plannings for 30 years. So I've seen what can happen in a 30-year period. And this is so interesting because I just did a little research. You know, there are four kind of categories of retirement, which I think you and I are going to go through today.
And this is the rule of four futures, where you can game out various retirement scenarios, both good and not so good.
Yeah, so the first one is expected retirement. And this is where I hope so many people are. It's you know your expenses in retirement, you know what your income sources are, you've had a financial plan done, you plan on retiring at a certain age, you know where you might want to live, and life is grand. You're retiring, you're living within your means, your portfolios are working, your income sources and everything is great. But it's not always that way. There's three other types of retirements that can sneak in. And the second one is, I often hear from clients, you know, I have this great plan, but I'm fearful. It's like a feared. They have expected. The second one is feared. They worry they're going to have a health problem or a disability, or the market's going to crash, you know, the day, the week, the month that they retire. So, you know, if you have those fears, there are some things you can do. You know, if you, you know, make sure you have disability insurance. So if you're forced, you know, to stop working because of a disability, your family will be okay. Maybe you get some long-term care insurance to combat your health risks. And make sure that if you don't have that, you can self-insure and put health, you know, in your budget. So yes, you can be feared, but there's some things you can do to mitigate that.
Yeah, it seems like the two retirement scenarios, I would say, that fall on the positive end of the axis is the one that we talked about, where everything more or less unfolds the way you expect it to. And then there is the one where you're very cautious and you're not only living within your means, but you're really living within your means and showing restraint. And then there's the type of retirement plan where something comes out of left field. As you mentioned, there's a health crisis, or potentially you and your partner, even though you've been together for decades, you decide you've had enough of each other, and there is a divorce in retirement. And how can you prepare for these various scenarios in a constructive way, one that doesn't make you completely neurotic?
Yeah, so we talked about the feared a little bit. The disciplined, I love. That's like the expected retirement, but it's almost like you have a safety net or you have a plan. So, you know, we always say you can have anything you want, not everything. So pick what's most important. So in the discipline category, I've seen people, you know, downsize homes. So they get some, you know, excess liquidity, or maybe they'd rather travel, so they sell their big home and go into a condo. They might need to realize if the markets go the other way, they have to reduce their budget over time, but they're aware of that. So they might end up spending less than they would like to, but they have a plan, they're disciplined, and they know there'll be food on the table and they'll be able to retire. The transformed one, that's one, believe it or not, happens more often than we think. There is a big trend of people getting divorced in their mid to late 50s. And two can live cheaper than one. So when couples do get divorced, assets are split. You know, you really have to take a look at your budget. And I always say, again, look at your values, because when you were married, you did a budget with someone else. Now that budget's just for you. So take a breath. Figure out what's most important. Look at your resources. Again, work with a financial planner, financial advisor. Have them run some numbers. See what your spending is. And, you know, I have had clients, you know, maybe they have to go back to the workforce as a consultant or a part-time job. But again, you can have anything you want, not everything. So pick what's most important. But the key to all this is to go in with eyes wide open and have a backup plan, because life just does not always go as planned.
Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder, Rappaport-Rikus Capital Management in Chicago.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Disney is planning a theme park in Abu Dhabi, its first in the Middle East. Let's discuss the move with Ken Leon, Director of Equity Research at CFRA in Delray Beach, Florida. Ken, thank you for joining us today. And that is certainly the headline to come out of the Disney first quarter earnings report. But this arrangement about the new theme park in Abu Dhabi is interesting, because even though Disney is not going to spend money to build it, someone else is going to take the risk as far as money is concerned, it will reap licensing fees from it.
Very exciting announcement, and it just shows you that great franchises in the U.S. can export their franchise, in this case Disney. It's not AI, but theme parks, no one does it better. They will develop and operate it. They'll get license royalty fees and also management fees for doing it. So for Bob Iger, creative, and also got the attention of media.
Also, this seems like a real turning point for the Emirates as a global tourist destination. Of course, Dubai has kind of marketed itself as the Instagram capital of the world, and Qatar hosted the World Cup a couple of years. So it just goes to show you that a lot of brands, international brands that offer experiences, are seeing the Emirates as an international destination.
That's right. I mean, there are others that are there, well established, like Ferrari, but it also, to your point, Emirates brings largest world airline, well over 100 million passengers a year, and one third of the world's population is 4-hour flight there as well. So on both parties, obviously for Disney it's exciting, and for that country it's going to bring more tourists to enjoy their location.
And it also seems like the theme parks, the experiences, as they said in the earnings call, are not only just a major source of revenue, but a major source of operating income for the company. Even despite all of this concern about the state of the economy, people still find the change in their couch cushions to go to Disney World.
It's really amazing. And particularly, well, the U.S. markets did show positive growth. And, you know, certainly on affordability, that has been a big issue over the last 12 months, but it did not impact the reported results today for the March quarter. And the theme parks are important because they're high margin, they generate a lot of operating income, they're durable, and yeah, they're a little bit cyclical if we, you know, face a recession, which we don't think we will. They did see year-over-year declines in the March quarter for Shanghai and Hong Kong, yet traffic was still pretty good. So, you know, that's the big concern for investors with Disney, is the experiences of the domestic parks. You should also know that they launched another cruise ship this quarter, and they got two more before the end of the year. And that, again, speaks to experiences being not as finicky, perhaps, as video streaming. But I want to tell you, the Disney Plus and the direct-to-consumer segment had outsized profitability from really small contributions a year ago.
Ken Leon, Director of Equity Research, CFRA in Delray Beach, Florida. Thank you for joining us today.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.